president signed the law, I don't think there was a realization on the part of our leaders as well as on the part of educators about how difficult it would be to follow this law. This law has the right goals, and these goals are broadly accepted, and the law itself has helped to bring about their acceptance, namely that all children should be paid attention to in school, that certain kids, such as poor kids or disabled kids, shouldn't be put aside, that we should pay attention to all of them. But this has proven to be a very difficult thing to do with the particular provisions as they're shaped by the law.
This latest study of yours took a look at a number of school districts around the country, including Calhoun County here in Alabama. And following up on what you just said, one of the major findings is that the law has escalated sort of a sense of stress amongst teachers.
Yes, that's right. What we have found is that teachers feel that the whole burden has been placed on their shoulders, and that they're being told that they have to raise test scores one way or another. And teachers are finding some way to do that. Now, this doesn't always lead to the best practices, but teachers are being told that's how they're going to be accountable, and therefore they're doing their best to raise test scores. And this has proven to be especially difficult, I think, for older teachers because they were used to teaching a different type of way. What the act is leading to over time is that there's going to be greater uniformity within each state in terms of what type of curriculum is being taught in the schools. And because you can't test statewide unless you allow teachers to know what's behind the test, which is a curriculum. And so states gradually are going to have some type of common curriculum or common agreement on what they expect kids to learn. And some of the older teachers, more experienced teachers, were used to much more freedom in the classroom. They were used to being able to spend time on the Renaissance if they wanted to in social sciences, or spend time on one part of trigonometry if they wanted to. And now with the pressure to raise test scores in all these areas, we're going to have more of a common type of expectation of what ought to be taught. And a number of experienced teachers just don't like that. And some of them are retiring as a result.
I have heard from folks in the field who are also concerned that the growing homogenization of curriculum, if you will, also may lead some of the more creative and innovative young teachers not to enter the field.
That is a possibility, and another problem with that could be that more gifted students are not challenged enough. If we are going in this direction, and that seems to be what the pressure for all this testing is leading us, we have to figure out a way that you can set a number of goals, a number of curricular goals for teachers, but give them much more freedom to be able to teach the way they want to achieve those goals. And also find some way that this curriculum isn't a low-level curriculum, but rather it's a curriculum that has various stages in it so that kids can really be challenged as well as brought up to a general level. And I don't think we're at that point at all right now. I think we're at the early stages of this type of standards-based reform. And unfortunately, we're seeing some of the negative aspects of that.
One of the other major findings is that 71% reported having reduced instructional time in at least one other subject, things like social studies, music, art, or science, in order to make room for more reading and math. What do you think is the outcome of that?
Well, that number surprised us. We did not expect that high percentage of school districts to say that they were, in effect, narrowing the curriculum. Now, this is narrowing the curriculum either to some extent or to a great extent, but it is a surprising finding, and we had heard about this on an anecdotal basis from teachers and administrators that this was happening, but it especially seems to be happening in poor schools and poor school districts. Because of the accountability, teachers are trying to find some way to raise the test scores, especially of students that are lagging behind. The positive argument, and this is the argument that Secretary Spellings and President Bush would make, the positive argument is that if kids don't know how to read and write and they don't know how to compute, they're not going to be able to do much else in life. The negative argument is that if you isolate kids and you just drill them hour after hour on reading and writing, they're going to lose out on understanding other things in the curriculum. I think, as in many things in life, the answer lies somewhat in the middle. It is true that kids who are lagging behind do need extra attention, extra periods in order to bring up their math and reading skills, but it shouldn't be at the neglect of understanding the rest of life, understanding history, understanding science, understanding music. And so the challenge, I think, is to find ways to help kids do better while also bringing in the other aspects of the curriculum. And since this has been publicized within the last week, we've been contacted by a number of school districts that have said that they face that dilemma, and they found some way that they could bring in an improvement of math into science, they can bring in an improvement of arithmetic into music, that they could bring in reading into history and into social sciences. And we're urging the U.S. Secretary of Education to survey the country and find the most creative ways so that we're not in this awful dilemma of kids either being isolated and drilled and killed in math and reading not being able to read and write because their curriculum is too broad for them. And so we hope that the Secretary will find these instances and help school districts to figure out how to do it a better way.
You mentioned earlier that we are, of course, sort of in the beginning process if you take the long-term look at this, and that a lot of the indications, at least in this beginning process, are that NCLB is really challenging school districts and perhaps making things difficult on them and on teachers. And I'm wondering where that leaves schools that are on the poorly performing lists, because they don't have forever to, you know, find these best practices out there and implement them.
No, that's a very good question. What we're finding, since we have tracked this act for 4 years now, in the beginning what we found was that most school districts didn't know what they would have to do. And then we gradually found that once they understood what they had to do, there was a great deal of resentment and a number of pushback on the part of school districts as well as state legislators and others. Now we're noticing the questions are starting to turn, and the questions are becoming, how do we do this? How do we improve schools? How do we bring about improvement in schools that have not done well for years? And where can we go to find the best ways to do things? And so I think people are understanding that the Congress and the President do not want to change this law right away. Changes are at least a year, if not 2 years off, and maybe 3 years off. And therefore, there has to be a way to find to live within most of the present parameters of this law, but find a way to do things better, to bring about improvements in schools.
In Birmingham City Schools, there are a number of schools that are on the poorly performing list. So many, in fact, that for a middle schooler at a poorly performing school, there's no place to transfer to
right. In
Birmingham City Schools. And, you know, it takes a while to get a toolbox together to turn things around. Do they have the time?
We don't know. I mean, that's a challenge to American society. This law has certainly set high expectations, and yet the president asked for or signed a bill last year that cut back federal spending on education. This year, his own budget is asking to cut back on federal spending to education, and this is at a time when more schools are entering the stages where they have to restructure under the law, and at a time when 23 states are going to institute more testing, which means that potentially next year more schools could be on watch lists because more grades are going to be tested. And it's also at a time when the states are raising the minimum bar, they're raising the minimum test score level, because they have to do that over 12 years in order to bring all students to proficiency. So the president and the Congress are providing less money for education while the expectations under No Child Left Behind are getting higher. And that doesn't seem to make sense. I mean, if we really want to deal with those schools in Birmingham, as well as in all these other school districts in the country, it would seem we would be mobilizing a national effort that would be finding experts, setting up teams of experts who could come in and bring change to a school. We'd be finding ways to find the best way to read and implement the best reading programs in the country. But we'd be doing this on a major scale, because the demands are getting to be major, but the assistance is not major. And so this is going to create all sorts of problems for us.
when tomorrow's students are studying history or politics in high school and they're looking back at the Bush presidency, what sort of legacy do you think they will be told about education and the Bush presidency?
Well, we're a nonpartisan center. I think it's better I not answer that. I can look back. I think kids, though, will look back and, let me approach it a different way. American public schools today have all sorts of problems, but kids in American public schools today know far more than kids in public schools did in 1940 or 1950 or even 1960. In fact, most kids in public schools today know more at their grade level than their parents did when their parents were in school at the same grade level. So we are improving. It's just that we're in the trenches so much and fighting so much, and it's so difficult to do that we don't realize that we have moved ahead. Now, the problem is, or there's two problems. One is that there are great inequities between American school districts. You have racially isolated school districts where more affluent whites have more resources available in the suburbs, and they're doing pretty well. You have very poor rural school districts, sometimes African-American school districts, that are isolated without many resources. You have big cities with high rates of poverty, high rates of minorities. And yet we're saying we want all kids to do better without getting serious about how we're going to provide help for all kids to really do better and not just for the more advantaged in our society to do better. And we're not doing that. We're not doing that on any serious level. The president is not doing that. He's helping to raise the expectations, but he's not providing the assistance in order for us to meet those expectations. And the other problem, besides inequalities in the country, the other problem is that the United States used to lead the world in high school graduation rates and college-going rates and so on. Now other countries have gotten ahead of us. Other countries are outdoing us in terms of the percentage of the people they send to college, their high school graduation rates. We're not doing as well. Even though we're doing better than we ever did before, other people are doing even better. And so that means the bar internationally has been raised. And so we can't just say, well, we're going to run things the way we've always run them. We've got to do far better for our kids so that they can face a world which is going to be far more competitive internationally in the future. So I would hope that when people look back 20 years, they would find that we met those challenges. I don't see us meeting them today because I see us raising the goals without providing the means to reach those goals.
Mr. Jennings, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome.